Welcome to the Ultra Running and Business Podcast, a random mix of running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this is the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. We are in Denmark. We're in Dion's home. You may recall Dion from our book review, where him and Henrik wrote this book about being a leader, not a coach. And we're going to talk a little bit about particularly chapter six, where I had the opportunity of featuring, and we're going to talk a bit about running, and we're going to talk about performance outside work and how we bring it back into work. And for that purpose, I'm going to turn the table and let Dion ask me some questions for a change. Dion.
I look forward to that. Thank you very much, Jakob, and thank you for being here. Could you tell a little bit about the background for this physical running activity? When did you start doing it, and why did you start doing it?
Absolutely. Thank you for the invite. I appreciate the question, and this is fun, turning the tables a bit. I think the correlations with endurance running or endurance sports and corporate work are interesting and obvious. And I think it's around process, and it's around breaking down challenges, it's around preparation, and ultimately setting yourself up for slick execution in environments and in situations that are not predictable, absolutely not, many variables, but following process and breaking things down into its molecules and preparing yourself headwise for a clean and comprehensive execution. I think there it's exactly the same approach I would take to running 100K on a mountain, to what I would pursue as a headhunter, what I would pursue in terms of planning the business and in terms of leading and trying to coach and direct my colleagues in the business.
But Jakob, you were a headhunter and a leader before you started doing ultra trail running, which I understand you did in 2016. So did you apply the structure, the discipline from your professional work into the running, or was it vice versa?
I think it was vice versa, because overcoming the challenge, or the 250K that the Marathon des Sables is about, the logistical component and the mental preparation and the physical preparation is what that race is all about. Whereas having been a headhunter for a number of years, I probably, a lot of it is in the muscle. So you don't necessarily every day come in and think, let me reflect on this. Let me break this down to what is it I'm going through. So yes, in my day to day, I'm following very clean processes. That's the type of headhunting that I believe in. But starting, as you said, not too long ago on the running, it's forced me down the path of really reflecting on how do we break this down into components. And that is one takeaway that I've taken and adopted then in business. And I feel it's the correlations are obvious. It's a very... And the advantages of adopting the same mindset and the same approach are clear.
And actually, from research, we know that that is the right way to do it if you want to excel in your performance. There's various research conducted in that area. How did you come about it? How did you find out that that was the way to excel in your running at that time?
I think the rules around competing in the MDS are quite quickly guide you down that avenue, because there's a set amount of calories per day you have to adhere to. There's a certain weight that your bag have to adhere to. And then there is just a sheer training for something which we don't find in, certainly not in our habitat, around heat and sand and running at night and all the things which we're not accustomed to. So preparing yourself training-wise for executing in an environment and in a situation we're not accustomed to, I think is very good practice for business. And allowing you to develop a much wider keyboard in terms of what can you cope with as an individual, let alone a leader. That's why I become a big ambassador for the concept of ultra running, because of this being aware of your own extended boundaries and the richness that gives you, that you can bring back into a work setting, that you can bring in to be a better colleague, that you can bring in to be a better business person, leader, decisive person. But also just having that knowledge of perhaps, you know, pitting yourself against something that you didn't feel that you were necessarily conditioned for, but you have no way of knowing. That is something which was a major takeaway.
If I talk to some of your employees, some of your key stakeholders about Jakob before and after, you conducted into this activity? What kind of difference do you think they would highlight?
I think, I like to think that they would put me down as having come back with completely different empathy levels. I think more, perhaps less inclined to, you know, sweat the small stuff, literally. And perhaps also more prepared to back myself. Mm. So that's what I'm talking about. What is increased confidence? And it's not necessarily kind of this type of, yeah, I'm strong, whatever. It's a deeper level of self-belief, which you could label as confidence, self-confidence, but I feel is richer than that. Yeah. It's not about the win. It's about, I was far from winning, by the way. I couldn't have been further from winning. This was about getting to the end, and it was about an adventure. But I think you do come away as a more, with a greater sense of accomplishment, a greater belief in yourself. And I think all those elements will make you a better leader.
Yeah. Do you think this is unique for you, or do you think that's pretty general for people who conduct this kind of... because you could also say that was the right time in your life to go into such a process. There could be many reasons for that. Or do you think it was the activity itself that really triggered this insight?
No, I would categorically say that insight is uniquely down to having faced those challenges. Okay. Having been in situations that you would not choose to be in, but having faced those situations and come through, when you don't actually have to, you could pull out of it of the race at any time. Overcoming those periods of severe adversity and coming out on the other side, I think is, wouldn't necessarily go as far as calling it a eureka moment, but I think it's a huge development moment. And no, I don't think it's unique to me either. I think it's consistent when I interview ultra runners, some of which are in corporate settings. In fact, we're doing a study with 50 ultra runners who are either in C-suite roles or in some sort of leadership roles. And we're doing that with Thomas International to try and get a deeper insight to some of these elements. But just on my own personal experience of having met other people in this space and interviewed some of the people, and some of them are extraordinarily good runners. But I think the consistent takeaway I have is that they have gone through a number of the same moments for themselves, that personal journey. And it's super interesting to hear about because many of them also have perhaps maybe some slightly darker reasons for put themselves in harm's way. And that may well be the case. And we all use different methods to manage ourselves. And I just think that particular one, it doesn't have to be running, but that blend of endurance and Mother Nature and putting yourself firmly outside your comfort zone, I feel is a massive differentiator.
I completely buy it. And I also think, I think you're right in the sense that it's not that specific activity. It's more the elements around the activity, you know, that it is really pushing yourself forward. I have one major concern around it, if I was to get started in this, and that's time.
Yep.
How much time do you spend on it, and can Les do it? Because I know you spend a lot of time. So.
No, I think it's a time thief for sure. And that, you know, going back to your point about process and preparation and so on and so forth, the first major challenge is how and where am I going to free up time for this? Mm-hmm. You know, when I have, you know, I have a family, I have a life that is not running, and you look at it and think, well, I see these ultra runners and they, you know, this guy lives in a camper van in Colorado, and that's not me, but I still like running. Yeah. So what's the happy balance? And yes, that's your first challenge.
Yeah.
Is how can I free up time in my week to run 100K? Where am I gonna find that time? But hey, that's only the first of many challenges. But actually the payback for finding that time is instant. Because the what running gives you, and I run every single day, but I sometimes run outside, sometimes run on the treadmill, and I will use it for different purposes. So I'm not doing it as a means to an end. I'm not doing it thinking I have to find this time because I've got this race coming up. I'm actually finding that I'm thoroughly enjoying the process, and the process itself is paying back to the business and to me as a leader every single day. So it fuels my creativity, it fuels energy levels, it helps me process challenges or problems or whatever it may be, I can channel that the energy that running gives me into whatever is needed, whether I need it as a pick me up or as a jet lag balancer, or whether I use it as a creative input. I think you start knowing yourself, what type of running does it give you? But I can't, you know, I can't disagree with you that challenge around time and how you find, you know, how you find, you know, an extra 7 to 8 hours or 10 hours a week to do this.
So if you are an executive watching this and you say, okay, I have a family, I have hobbies, I have a business, or at least work that I need to prioritize, but I would like to sort of tap into some of the benefits of this. What would your sort of top three advices be?
First of all, I would say take a long, hard look at your awake time and your sleep time. Because there is a period in the morning, and I guess you can probably guess where I'm coming to here. But for me, if you can get up early, about 5 o'clock, maybe sometimes a little earlier, sometimes a little later, you could grab an hour and a half without taking that time away from your other priorities. And if you could take that time away from your evening, so question yourself whether that hour between 10 and 11 at night is really quality time, or whether you are actually just zoning out, in which case you might as well
go to
sleep. So if you can move your body clock around, that instantly gives you access to some time that you could spend on running. So one is around your body clock and time. And then I would say the other two components is get a decent physio and see that person early when you start having niggles, because you will have niggles, particularly if you embark on running when you're as young as we are. Yeah. So, and perhaps the final piece is start paying a bit of interest and attention to your nutrition and your strategy around that. Because I take supplements, that there are some things in your body that don't get produced after you hit 25. So be aware of supplements. And here I'm not talking anything other than, you know, glucosamine and fish oils and stuff like that, just to look after yourself. And try and get, and maybe the final piece is try and get some of your environment on board. Whether it's doing it run with colleagues, run with your family, or that way it becomes more sustainable rather than you being a solo artist. Because I actually really, really enjoy running with other people. I would not become a member of a running club because I don't need that. But if you said, why don't we go out running next time, you can absolutely be up for it. And you very quickly find that people say, I don't want to run with you because I have this perception that you're going to be either run fast or long or both. And reality is that, you know, if you and I went out in the woods here, just outside your door, I'd run for, you know, 1K, 2K, 5K, and I'd enjoy that just as much. So you can make things more sustainable by getting people on board and, you know, get your band together rather than go solo, because it can be a very, you know, it can be a lonely pursuit. The races themselves are, you've got to really embrace the solitude. And I find that therapeutic. But in general, everyday living, I don't seek solitude. But for racing purposes, I think that's where the real therapy kicks in.
In the final chapter here, which is about, you know, getting started, about the change in leadership, we have this Simon Sinek, quote, "Dream big, start small, but most of all, start." And I guess it's the same with this thing. Just get started, do something, you know, and as with leadership, I suppose this is also, you know, there will be good days, there will be bad days, but the most important is to just keep on going. And even though things are tough, you just need to push yourself forward. All the time, and as time goes, you will find that it becomes more and more natural. Become more and more integrated into your natural habitat, and that way you will slowly but consistently become better.
I think I'm a fan of Simon, and that statement, I mean, that resonates. And I don't know who's the inventor of the relationship between inspiration, motivation, and action, but it's that triangle. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. And it anchors a bit on the same issue. I'm saying, rather than sit and wait for that moment of inspiration that will trigger your motivation, that will trigger action. Just do something, you know, and don't make it conditional on a whole lot of other stuff. And if we're just going back to the simplicity of running, let's not overcomplicate it. Let's not make it conditional on even, oh, I can't run until, you know, I have a 100-pound pair of trainers, or there's a whole lot of stuff you can do to get started. The beauty of running is that it pays back actually very, very quickly, sometimes a bit too quickly, which in itself can trigger some injuries, because, you know, your heart and lungs will adjust much quicker than your knees and ankles and hips. You know, they need a bit more time. But really, running pays back very, 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 very quick. And so going back to the relationship of the triangle, I think is very, very topical when it comes to running, that a little bit of action, you know, tend to really feed motivation and inspiration. And maybe not take it to the ridiculous levels that I have in the last 4 years.
So less can also do it than you have. So you can do this without, you know, being on the very top ambition level.
And also, I mean, some people will set themselves this marathon aim, which of course then becomes very rooted in the time that it takes to finish a marathon. And that can also have merit, because that also allows you to break that challenge down into a very, very clean structure. Ultramarathons, you can't really do that, because you can't predict them. Whereas running Copenhagen or London Marathon, you can predict them, because you know the surface, you know the locality of the water stations, or you know how you react over 26 miles, and you can work towards it, and you can really break it down. And then you can execute at whatever aim it is. But what I quite like about ultramarathons is that they have so many unknowns, yet you want to prepare for them. But there are some elements which would be firmly outside your control, which requires a different level of bandwidth to a road marathon.
Can you say a little bit more about how you apply it in your professional life? How do you use what you have learned from your ultra trail running into your life as a headhunter and a leader?
I think initially I thought they were completely different worlds of mine. Yeah, so one, I started enjoying running and always quite enjoyed my work. Coming back from Sahara the first time, I felt there was something there which was very positive for work, very positive for my mental state. And I think what I've since then started digging into was the value in business of what I would classify as positive stress, and the momentum that you can generate. And most of us have a certain demand for self-drive, self-motivation. And I feel that those are elements that I embarked on figuring out, how can I make this work for me? Because most races will have this, you know, you build up, you prepare, you execute, you either deliver or you don't deliver. But then you hit a bit of a cliff, you come off a cliff, and this is highlight, and it's took this focus, and what do you do afterwards? So I think business can be a bit the same. So when we operate as headhunters, we get a challenge and we map it out, and we follow a process to get to a goal. No different to overcoming a race. You set a strategy, you prepare for it, you create a team around it, you deliver the goods, and then what? So what I've done in trail running is that I just signed up for loads of races. I'll complete a task, and I would literally just step into the next one. The positive stress that I get on the back of constantly being race ready. You know, bar a few days after each race, clearly, but it are clearly a momentum that I take into my everyday job. And hopefully it also inspires a bit of the same in my colleagues.
But I think intuitively it sounds right. And I mean, the level of planning, the level of structure that you need in your running, obviously is relevant in a professional context. Also the need for endurance, the need for walking the whole mile, you know, so to say. Because sometimes work can be tough, it can be boring, it can be exhausting. And the fact that you have trained your body to actually go through that process and keep on going, even though it's tough, it's frustrating at times. I think that that is a key element that I can easily see is similar to work life. And the final thing is the acknowledgement from within, the pleasure of succeeding, the feeling of success. When you have actually gone through a tough process, it's been perhaps you wanted to quit many times, but you didn't. You followed through. You achieved your goal, and at the end of the finish line, you can actually celebrate that success. Obviously, that is the same in a work environment where you have a task that is really knocking you out. Potentially, you're feeling stress. You're feeling frustrations. There's a lot of things not going your way, and that only intensifies the feeling of success once you have completed the task. So what you're saying, Jacob, completely resonates in my mind in terms of the similarities, and both in terms of the traits, the skills needed, but also in terms of the psychology, which is very much also what you are talking about in terms of this confidence, this feeling of satisfaction and gratitude.
I mean, the study that we've done, some of the early results are categorically showing us and confirming that certainly the data set that we've analyzed, the psychological profile that they're showing and why they're running has got nothing to do with getting recognition from others. Perhaps you would have lost money on that if you were a betting man, that you'd say, why are these people running? And you see that picture of somebody crossing the finish line and yes, you get your 15 seconds of celebration, some good photos, but actually every story or everything that study suggests that it's not about achieving that recognition. So it is something internal. For people who pursue those challenges, and I can categorically confirm that that's my take on it. And actually, the other bit, which I think is also a clear correlation to certainly what I do, is that if you're doing something just for the sake of closing the deal, or just for the sake of the reward you get on the back of closing the deal, in my world, headhunting, complete a placement, collect your finder's fee, if that was your single motivation for getting to Sahara is the 15 seconds crossing that finish line, you're not going to do it. And what I would say to colleagues as well, if your single motivation for completing this piece of work for this client is that finder's fee, then I would say, you know what? That's not a culture that I sponsor in this business. It's not what I'm about. And I don't actually think it's even sustainable. But that's because, in my world, you have the transactional mindset, which is really more akin to, I'm doing this as a means to an end. I'm doing it because there's a check at the end of it. Where I'm much more inclined to say, our drivers are different. And you've got to actually enjoy the journey, enjoy the process, and take reward from the process itself. Otherwise, I think sustainability will come in and be questioned. If it's purely for the win, that's not to say the win is not important. In my world, of course, it's very binary. Did we solve or did we not solve the problem that the client came to us with? So yes, the win is important, but I'm just saying that cannot and should not be the only driver, nor should it be in an ultra marathon.
But I think that's probably why the physical activity in itself. It's not enough. You need to convert it in a way, because even though there is something around the structure, the planning, the endurance that are similar, if you do not put some thought processes into it, if you don't adapt it to professional life where you actually have a team and you need to win as a team, you need to succeed as a team, you need to cooperate. If you don't add that element, you just take the individual running activity and the achievement into business, then you can end up being a selfish asshole who is basically just working to achieve whatever is good for himself. That's a critical element to put into the equation in order to convert the success formula into business, all right?
And whilst going to Sahara to complete, 5 or 6 days of running may seem like a solo effort. Once you understand these races, you realize that part of the challenge is that you cannot most likely complete this on your own. But so your team is not who you normally would classify as your team, whether your colleagues or your family or your friends. No, your team actually becomes the other fellow competitors. So initially you think, I'm there to beat others. No, you're not actually. This is a solo effort. So you're competing against yourself, but you actually need the people around you for one simple reason, and that is around mental strength. Mm. And that is around everything that happens that is not associated with you know, your legs and running. Mm. And it's all about looking after your mental health during that period of time. And you may be able to pull that off on your own, but that would be unusual. Mm. So the challenge is also to you as a social animal in that setting with people you haven't met before.
Yeah.
Is also super interesting. And I think that's not dissimilar in business that you and I can talk about and share certain challenges, and we will both get something, a takeaway from those conversations that we have, although our objectives and our business challenges are different.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that even in business, you know, you can learn from your competitors.
Yeah.
And by, you know, keeping them at bay because they're competitors versus actually say, well, there are certain elements that we're not going to talk about, but there are many elements where we can talk and we can learn from each other.
And I guess that's also the difference between being a professional runner where you actually run to win the race, where you, even though you are good, you are still an amateur conducting a very, very tough race.
Yeah.
And that means it's really about completion.
Yeah.
It's about crossing the finish line, not as the first person, but part of a group.
Yeah.
And I guess that would also mean that the whole team feeling, the whole group feeling of achieving this together is more specific and more coming to life, rather than if you were actually in the very front and you just needed to... to win this race. And I think that would be the case for most executives or most normal people who would jump into this sort of activity.
Absolutely. And the curiosity and interest between runners, whether they're on the podium or not, we are. Everybody's interested in everybody else's world. Mm. So some of the guys that I've met live in Denver at 3,000 meters and they just run mountains for a living. They're as curious about my life as I am about theirs.
Mm.
And one thing that we have, our common denominator, is our love for running.
Mm.
But the fact that they can finish an ultra marathon in half the time that I can doesn't mean that we don't have something in common. We have plenty in common, and there's plenty of curiosity and plenty of elements where we can learn from one another. And I think that's, for me, that's also a bit of the beauty of running, is that you can stand on the start line next to some of the best runners in the world. You know, I play tennis, but I'm never gonna play with Federer.
Oh, well, you could, but you're not gonna win.
It's just.
And I really like this perspective of that it's really not about winning. It's about the whole process being sort of a victory, and that is not an individual, because some people would say that this is a very individual sport, and you're on your own. You're just zooming into your own mind, but you make it sound like it's actually a team effort. It's a group effort, and it's very much, you know, something you do in together with other people and can do with other people.
And you can, and your competitors, they play a part, a big part during the race, when you're running, because afterward, once you've been running for 15 hours, when you meet somebody after you've run that length of time, there's a reason why you're meeting them at that time after so many hours. That they're probably running about the same pace as you. You may have started faster, you may have started slower, whatever, but you're equalized at that point.
Yeah.
And then you start actually realizing that, it's just what I needed was actually dialogue or something to take my mind off things. So, you know, meeting and sharing experiences with seemingly complete strangers, it creates these mini bonds between people.
Yeah.
That you then keep that bond in some way, shape, or form, or you might meet them at future races, but you keep a bond because you both kind of met at a very, very challenging period, and I think it's that element I like.
It's clear that you are very passionate about this, Jacob. Is there a way you can integrate this into your business? Because now you're sort of a role model for this. You've done it yourself. Is this something you have plans on, you know, adding to your services in your business, or is it more an individual thing, personal?
No,
thing?
I have taken an ambassador role for a few firms that are catering for ultra running, and I have taken an ambassador role for certain races. And maybe what I can offer is trying to, you know, to demystify it, but also to try maybe and find some more robust links to performance in other parts of your life. And the study that I embarked on with the ultra runners is just the first step of that, to actually feel, is this something that I've come away from with ultra running that is unique to my perception of it, or is there a pattern? Because there's another interesting element which I should probably try and add in, which is, you know, the what happens when you fail and learning to fail. And in ultra running terms, it's the dreaded DNF, which is did not finish. And whilst I've, you know, touch wood, I've not had a DNF on my record, but I will. I've had exposure to a number of runners where I understand, where I see them DNF. I've spoken to them before they've pulled out of the race, and I have trying to get an understanding of where their mental state is. What is it that, because this is not through injury. So it's at what point does that mental stamina just say, "Nah, I'm done here," and I'm really interested in that. Because of course, if you're taken out of a race because you don't meet the cutoff times, that's one thing. You know, your legs just went in, or your head, or whatever. But it's quite interesting to speak to runners to understand more about why did you suddenly decide that you weren't going to do this when you decided for so long that you were going to do it, and what are you going to do tomorrow when you have to pick yourself up. So I'm interested in those techniques as well, because the correlations, again, obvious, whether it's in life or business, anything. What do you do after failure?
So that's going from did not finish to did not fail in your mind.
Yeah.
And getting back on the horse. But I think I completely agree with that. And I think we all fail. We all have bad days. We all have tough periods in our lives. And what really characterizes the people that succeed in the long run, in my opinion and from my observations, is the ability to get back, because nobody is perfect. Nobody is just succeeding all the time. Some would probably like to say that they are, but nobody really is or really are. So it's really a matter of managing those periods in your life, those failures, whatever you call them, and then say, okay, I may have lost the battle, but I'm not going to lose the war, and I'm going to keep on fighting, because I think that's really the trigger to success.
And I think that's also a massive attractive attribute as a leader, to accept that failure and losses is categorically a part of running any business. And I think what you should aim to get to is when you do fail or you do lose, that you understand what's happened.
And learn from it.
But I do think understanding it, learning from it, but also draw a line under it and move on. So I think that's critical. And I'm thinking of some of the conversations I've had with my clients in commodity trading, where loss-making trades is part of trading.
Yeah.
Understanding why somebody lost money is an interesting one. Because, you know, the best examples is really saying, you know, did we stick to the strategy? Were our assumptions correct? You know, and you go through this checklist and you say, well, we did all the right things and something happened in the market and we lost money. That can be perfectly okay. You just have to take it on the chin and not let it have too big of an influence in what is suddenly your own makeup, your own self-confidence, and your own approach to life and risk-taking and the business that you're in. So reflect on it, but also get ready to process it and put it in a place and draw a line under it and then start again.
What's your next goal in life?
Oh, gosh. That's a tricky one.
Yeah.
I think it's a really tricky one at the moment with the elephant in the room, the pandemic in the room. It's made an enormous, enormous difference to my lifestyle, and I feel like a bit of a caged animal, not being able to travel, having had to cancel a long list of what were going to be iconic races. I don't know. There's a coping element at the moment, rather than some grand plan. You know, you learn from these things as well. And I think the COVID, as troublesome as it is for everything, it's also another opportunity to learn. But I don't think that it has necessarily inspired me to set sort of, you know, grand plans.
What have you learned from this period of Corona?
I think it's definitely a shift of attention to. There's a lot of internalization going on, certainly with me. I speak with everybody else as well. Well, for starters, you get much more time on your own or with you and yours, which in itself give you time to reflect, and it gives you time to reevaluate priorities and reevaluate aims. Obviously, it's no surprise to you that my race calendar is decimated. So I think there's a lot of learnings from what that means in terms of your own mental health and what constitutes good mental health. How you put a premium on the individuals close to you and what role they play. Yes, I do have one or two visions and dreams for the future. One is something completely different, which is, you know, building a restaurant, for instance, in the midst of a pandemic. Probably not the wisest thing to do, but I'm banking on the fact that there will be an end on COVID. But hey, even if there isn't, we'll still build a restaurant, and it's, you know,
still need to eat.
And I think there's something really quite important about having dreams. Yeah, I find it fuels. I find it's motivating. I think passion is a very, very powerful component in business. And I think finding methods, particularly in these times, how can you be self-propelling in times where, you know, some days you just don't feel like it, and the role of being an extrovert versus being an introvert, and really questioning where you're getting your energy from.
Wow.
And I think my whilst I like those solo pursuits, I've come to the conclusion that I get a lot of my energy from being with others.
Yeah.
And whether they're colleagues or clients or people in general. So I just didn't know that before. And that's been a huge challenge for me, and I am overcoming it. And I think and I probably would not have really had that opportunity before, because the solitude of running on a mountain somewhere is hardly your everyday scenario. But suddenly going from working with a group of people, you know, going to London, going to Geneva, going to Singapore, US or whatever, to meet more people, to interview candidates, to sit in meeting rooms, planning businesses with clients. It's all about people and momentum that you can create by having some shared aims. So for me, it's been a massive learner and takeaway to say, well, okay, now you don't have those people. Now we all either all take it online, which some of it works, some of it is a bit weird. But it's a super interesting learner for yourself. And
do you think there'll be some long lasting changes in the way we do business from this?
Yeah, for sure. But I think it's first and foremost, I think everybody will be asking themselves, was this a eureka moment, realize that I actually work much better on my own without distraction, and I deliver better in that way. Companies, and I have interviewed many of them on this very subject, are clearly getting themselves ready to deliver on what is going to be the future working. And large companies, I mean, actually, I interviewed the CEO of Engie recently, and they even have like an internal workshop that is made up of employees from across their organizations that are pooling together ideas to figure out what is going to be the future of working for them. But actually looking at some of those large companies, and you can get some really interesting clues that will give you an idea of the direction of travel. And I think it's very much more around tuning into what makes people deliver optimal. And maybe just say, let's just forget how things was done a year ago. And let's keep an open mind into what does it mean to optimize the well-being and the output and the performance of our staff. And then start again. And I think those processes that companies are, or those challenges that companies are now embracing, I think is super interesting.
When you look at people who sort of in midway through their life, they sort of, you know, buy a nice car and start doing some extreme sports and they stuff like that. And I assume that that's not what you have done as part of this venture of yours.
I think it's it may well be at least part of it, because I do think that you reach a time in your life where you need it. I started the car thing. I had my first kind of midlife crisis in that when I was 28.
and you've had it ever since.
so I can relate to that, but I do think that we all get moments where you might just think, "What the hell's it all about?"
No.
So you pursue experiences or material to try and find it, and maybe men are more, you know, there's a pattern there. So what you're alluding to is you know, I can't sit and say no, none of that was driving me. I think the desire to challenge yourself, whether it's fueled by a midlife crisis or not, I guess the word midlife crisis puts, you know, potentially quite a negative spin on it, but maybe they're just those moments that you face in life where you...
Maybe it's a midlife window. Of course, I asked you to provoke you a little bit, Jacob. I mean, and I think the reasons for you getting into this exercise is it can be interesting for a psychologist, but what really not that interesting for anybody else. I think what's interesting here is what you got out of it. And it's obvious that that it has taken a lot from your side, but you have also gained a lot from it, and I think that's really the most important thing around this personal journey you've been on.
And I don't think you can take that as a guarantee either, that's what's going to happen, because the colleague I ran it with at the time, you know, he hung up his trail shoes, you know, after the race, and that was it. Where I came back and I felt, hey, I found, you know, I think I've found a calling here, and I want to dig deeper. So I can't, you know, so it's absolutely not guaranteed that hey, this will connect, but I would still maintain that it's worth finding out.
Yeah, but you can also say that that's probably also a result of your readiness. And now we're talking about this midlife crisis. We can also talk about it as a midlife opportunity or an open window. It's also about being ready in life for something new, being ready to experiment, being ready to take something in. Because we also know that from therapy, the single most important driver for success in therapy is not the psychologist's ability, the psychologist's methods or anything else. It's the client's readiness for learning, for developing. And the same goes for professional coaching, consulting. It doesn't matter how great you are as a teacher, as a coach, as a mentor. If the person you are trying to help grow and develop is not ready for it, then it's just like hitting your face into a wall. So I think just reflecting a bit on what you say, it seems like you back in 16, you were ready for that change in your life. There was an open window and you sort of jumped out and you harvested all the benefits from that.
I think it's super interesting to, you know, to hear you put words on it in that way, because it's very easy to, after the event, it was all part of the plan, and I had the crystallized view. This is how I was going to do it. These were my reasons why, and actually now I'm sort of actually sometimes struggling with even putting words on why. Why did I start it? But I think in retrospect, I can relate to all the elements that you're bringing up there. But particularly the one that really resonates was around how much is it about
you being ready yourself to embark on a journey, on a mental journey,
yeah.
And having also, you know, personally embraced therapy, I really respect the power of it.
Yeah.
But I can also completely see how if I wasn't ready, it would be a waste of money and a waste of time for everybody involved. So yes, it starts with you, and it starts with that readiness to dive in.
I guess the good question here would be then, how do you get that readiness? You know, if a person is not really there, there was the right time in your life to jump into this change.
Yeah.
If that is not there for somebody else who really finds this interesting, how would that person go about and get it done?
Yeah, there isn't a quick fix to this. Would be my take on it without being an expert. Maybe you can add some words on that. But I think it's such an individual process. And I guess what I feel the sort of my takeaway from my own personal experience with both running and therapy, and even you know, I've had some issues to deal with myself that I've tried various ways of sorting, even including you know, medicine. And I think fundamentally it's about when you're ready, you're ready.
Mm.
And that's not when somebody else tells you you're ready. But I think how you can work on yourself is I guess everybody gets to a point, if you're challenged by any of these issues, is that you may get to a point where you think, I really want to do something about my state of mind.
Mm.
And I want to be open to taking inspiration from others who have perhaps embraced the journey that I can learn from and try and understand what did they get out of it and why did they get that out of it and how did they start? And I think that's where I like reading biographies for that reason, to understand how other individuals have perhaps overcome some challenges over a long period of time. And for me, it was, I guess, just I got curious about how I was feeling, why I was feeling it. And I guess, yes, it may have been triggered by something really sad in my life. But ultimately, you get to a point where you think, okay, I'm going to shift my attention on this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to figure out a way of navigating in this. And you ought to have an interest in your own, not just your own mental health, but also how you tick, why you tick, and what it takes to be, you know, it's an overcoined version, the best version of yourself. But I think it is about being the best version of yourself. You want to be that person to your business partners, to your colleagues, to your family, to your friends.
No.
So I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to pursue techniques and personal research into understanding yourself better, understanding how you can be that version more often than not. And that may require therapy. It may require running. It may require challenges. It may require getting outside your comfort zone. It may require something else. But going back to our point, and Simon Sinek said, you know, whatever you do, just take a step, and just be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But there clearly are some elements that you can't be open just because somebody else tells you to be open. So your first point of contact is really say, okay, I'm just going to internalize this for a second. Do I feel inspired to embrace this? Do I feel that I need it? Am I curious about it? If there are some yeses in there, then try and make a start and figure out what is it that can trigger a start to inspire yourself, motivate yourself. And for me, it was a cocktail of initiatives. It wasn't just the right.
It wasn't one single thing.
No.
Congratulations, Jacob.
Thank you.
Well, it's been very interesting to listen to your thoughts, and I think you clearly managed to get something positive out of a certain period in your life, and you have managed to connect the dots from the physical world into the professional, which I think is very admirable. And thank you again for letting us use you as an example in our book. I appreciate that very much. I think it's a perfect example of of how you can work with yourself consistently, structured, yeah. focused. And I think it even though it takes a lot, you're a clear example of you can say an ordinary business person, if mm-hmm. I may use that term, mm-hmm. Using some activities from the physical life, from physical activity, and actually applying those principles into mm-hmm. your professional life and getting something clearly beneficial out of it.
It's been super interesting to be play a little part in your book with Henrik and the discussions that we've subsequently had. And I hope there's something here which we can also explore further. I think it's super interesting.
I think so.
That's it for this week. This was the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. I hope to see you back next week for more randoms around running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this was the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. For more information about everything that goes on here in this business, you may want to follow me on LinkedIn. For anything that goes on in my world on the trails and in ultra running, you may want to jump onto Instagram and follow the Danish Ultra Runner. Thank you again. Bye-bye.